edition of Gray Matters. We'll be back next week with another hour-long presentation from Alternative Radio down in Boulder, Colorado. Check out their full collection of works at www.alternativeradio.org. Coming up on CQT is Drama Text and an hour of spoken word recordings. We'll get to it after some station business.
This fall, one of North America's foremost documentary film festivals will take place.
Montreal International Documentary Festival.
At EDM.
A 24th edition that's more socially engaged and unifying than ever.
The program includes this year's 100 best documentaries.
Screening from November 10th to the 21st in Montreal theaters.
Also available online from November 14th to the 25th all across Canada.
Come to the Cinémathèque Québécoise, where all stories meet.
Discover the complete program at ridm.ca.
Depuis toujours, les infirmières prennent soin des patients avec cœur et dévouement. Aujourd'hui, c'est à notre tour de prendre soin de ces professionnels en valorisant leurs compétences et en assurant rapidement un meilleur équilibre entre travail et vie familiale. C'est également l'occasion pour les personnes qui ont quitté le réseau public de revenir prêter main forte avec de meilleures conditions. Plus que jamais, nous avons besoin d'elles pour améliorer la vie des patients. Pour en connaître davantage sur notre plan d'action, rendez-vous à québec.ca/infirmière. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
FM band is from 88 MHz up to 108.
You've got this frequency. We're going to call you CKUT. You've got this frequency, 98.3. That frequency is what you're picking up when you tune that radio.
Very impressive.
You can sit on the moon and look like you pick up CKUT, clear as a bell.
Fascinating. Your analysis seems logical.
CKUT is on the air.
And welcome to the November 18th edition of Drama Text. Tonight on the show we have American poet Sharon Olds reading at the Hammer Museum in Los Angeles for their poetry series. Well, here she is, Sharon Olds.
Good evening. Is there... Is there a lot of traffic tonight or something? Because people I'm expecting are not here. We're expecting. Okay. Well, I have to remind you about cell phones and noise-making gizmos. And if you're not on the mailing list for this series and would like to be, you can sign up at the table near the entrance. I'm Stephen Yuntzer from the English Department at UCLA, which is one of the main sponsors of this series, partly because we're fortunate enough to have the aid of the Friends of English, which is an invaluable support group that helps the department out. Our other sponsors include, and of course, obviously the museum, UCLA's Cultural and Recreational Affairs. As I think you all know, from her beginning, Sharon Olds has been one of our most remarkable poets of the body. She is, more narrowly, one of our most notably sensuous poets, and even more narrowly, she is one of our most erotic poets, by which term I mean something like the antithesis of pornographic. At least if that latter term implies, as its etymology suggests, prostitution or commerce. Eros really has to do on this hypothesis not with acquisition or with material exchange, not with holdings of any sort, but with desire, longing, Sehnsucht, with difference and separation and yearning. This is the case no less with Sharon's most recent book, though its subject is at the far end of the erotic experience. The volume is entitled Stag's Leap, and which is a winery, of course, as some of you I see know, and there is an allusion in the title to that winery. And it's about falling out of love. It's about divorce. Divorce, which, as William Carlos Williams wrote, is the sign of knowledge in our time. so, it's still our time. That's almost 100 years ago that he said that. But it's, if the tone weren't all wrong, the book could have been called The X-Files. It's about the relationship between the poet and her ex, after all. But X is a notoriously polyvalent term. It stands for the unknown, not to mention the kiss in the email sign-off. Or is that the O? That's the kiss. I never know. It probably depends on how you kiss. And, of course, for the X, for the contraries of multiplication and cancellation. Sharon's poems, the new ones, feature what we might call the X qualities, foremost among which would be extravagance, by which I mean a wandering out of the way, an excursion into unfamiliar territory. One indication of their extravagance is their exuberance when it comes to diction. In the absence of the loved one, what the poet has, and what has even caused that absence, she sometimes seems to suspect, is her enthusiasm for her medium. Poem after poem is a cornucopia of rich, often rare terms, and time after time we are surprised by reckless terms of speech and exotic tropes. Whether she's conjuring nearly indescribable sounds that sleepers make, or the sublime color variations in a hip bruise, or the intricacies of a French bra, she loves to pile up descriptors and appellations, to make catalogs, to string together hyper-analytical figures. The poems embellish, excessively, if you will, in the course of elegizing the lost marriage and probing the reason for its end and making something of the nothing it might have seemed. As they do so, the poems become exhilarating meditations, recollections, and withal celebrations of the extremities of loneliness and love, and perhaps their inextricability. Sharon Olds.
Wow, 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 wow. That's why one writes, why one lives, is for something so generous, beautiful, beautifully put, exhilarating, exuberant. Thank you. I'm very touched and very energized by that kind welcome. Hey, I'm in LA. This is so cool. I've been here like, I don't know, about a half an hour. Now, I'm looking forward to reading a few poems from Stag's Leap. And I will start with one now that Stephen has so kindly welcomed me with word of that. Oh, how's the sound? It feels good from here, and it was good there. Good. This evening is also, for me, my first reading since my new book was accepted by my editor. And so I'm going to be reading a bunch of those poems as well. And then in the middle, if you like, we'll have a conversation, because I love to hear and talk and, get the sense of where I am and where we are together and what we're doing. And I was going to start with a poem in case there was anyone in the room who had never been to a poetry reading before. But it just doesn't look like that to me. So I'm going to jump in with an ode. It's a manuscript still, I guess, but it's become an accepted manuscript, is called Odes. It's a book of odes. And please don't ask me what an ode is, because I don't know. And I feared that if I looked it up, that I would find out that I was actually not writing them and I would get discouraged. They began when I was in a bookstore and I saw a book of Neruda's odes, Odes to Common Things. And I had read him and admired him, and I'd seen Il Postino a couple of times, but I'd never really got into his work for some reason. And this was Facing Page, and I just didn't really know that that could be done or had been done. Odes to Common Things. So, not planning to, but the next time I wrote it, I wrote because I had seen this book. And later I'll read the first ode that I wrote, but I thought I would start with this one. Ode to the clitoris. Little eagerness, flower girl basket of soft thorn and petal, near the entry of the satin column of the inner aisle, scout in the wilderness, wild ear which perks up, tender dowser which points, imp shape shifter, bench pressing biceps of a teeny goddess who is buff, lotus for grief, wincy Minerva who springs full armored, molten, I did not know you at 7. I thought you were God's way of addressing me when I kept swinging on the rings after the bell had rung. He didn't use his words, he used you to get my attention. He wrenched me and wrenched me then in 6 or 7 wrenches of my body and brain, you, the tiny wrench which winched the wrenches. Later, you would do that without God, with boys, with kisses, and later you'd become an instrument of love's music. Today, I saw your portrait for the first time, your dorsal vein, your artery, your cavernous body, your vestibular bulb, your suspensory ligament, and I could see how evolution got the idea from you to invent a creature something like you, but a lot bigger. You were named for a Greek hill, clinine, a slope. You are the ground of our being, the tiny figure of the human, the hooded stranger who comes to the door, and if we bless her, we will be blessed. And it just turned out I was totally in a mood to praise things. And I was also, for about 9 years, I was living in New Hampshire with a partner with whom I didn't feel it might be the right thing to publish, to read in public and publish intimate personal poems. I had felt it was totally the right thing to do all those years before, which I believe it had been. But I just wasn't sure, and so the pressure of praise built up and came out in these more general poems. I've never had a very strong sense of the abstract. Hi. I don't know what happened, if I developed one or it developed me or what it was. As we see more of them, we'll have more sense of that tonight. But I don't want to read just odes, so I also moved during this time. I'd lived 44 years in the same place, Upper West Side, New York. I moved downtown, and I wrote this poem. And we were just talking about Deb Garrison. in her second book, I think, wrote one of my favorite books about September 11th, 2001. Just an amazing poem. And this poem is called "Looking South at Lower Manhattan, Where the Towers Had Been." If we see harm approaching someone, if you see me starting to talk about something I know nothing about, like the death of someone who's a stranger to me, step between me and language. This morning, I am seeing it more clearly that song can be harmful in its ignorance, which does not know itself as ignorance. I have crossed the line, as the line was crossed with me. I need to apologize to the letters of the alphabet, to the elements of the periodic table, to O and C and H, oxygen, carbon, hydrogen, which make up most of a human body, body which breaks down in fire, to the elements it was composed of, and all that is left is ashes. Sacred ashes of strangers, carbon and nitrogen, and the rest departs as carbon dioxide and is breathed in by those nearby, the living who knew us and the living who did not know us. I apologize to nitrogen, to calcium with the pretty box shape of its crystal structure. I apologize to phosphorus, and potassium, that raw, bright metal we contain, and sodium and sulfur, and to the trace amounts which are in us somewhere, like the stars in the night, copper, zinc, cobalt, iron, arsenic, lead. I am singing against myself, as if rushing towards someone my song might be approaching to shield them from it. So once I was living right close, I just saw it in a different, I saw myself writing about what I don't know in a different way. Oh, yeah. Then I'd like to read a poem from May 2010. I didn't know I was writing it a couple of months before our beloved Lucille Clifton was going to die. But I wrote it in a spirit of that time. You know, these poems we toss off because they just rise and flood over the edges out of us, and that we don't maybe even think they will be real poems and we'll ever read them to anyone. Ode to my living friends, May 2010. What a long gap there has been between deaths. It seems as if none of those closest to us has gone for what seems months. For me, it's been so long that when I think of someone dying, I think of my mother and father. My farriers out of nothing, out of the temporary rich something they were made of. I have carried them with me, not like a partial twin in a sling in front of and against me, but in my body, in my brain cells. But you, my friends, my chosen and chosen by ones, I see you as built-in aspects of the earth, like elements, like members of the periodic table. I know we're mortal. The open door is there. But for weeks and weeks, I have forgotten that I'm going to lose every one of you until the ones who are left lose me. When I was a child, I could not have lost you. I did not know that I would find you. I'm blessed that it will happen to me. Before it does, Let me say, you were exactly who I'd been looking for without daring to imagine. Breast that presses against other breasts, it was you. Root of washed sweet flag, timorous pond snipe, nest of guarded duplicate eggs, it was you. Hands I have taken, faces I have kissed, mortal I have ever touched, it was you. So that's for all of you, and of course we know who else it's from, who has gone from our poetry world in the last 2 years. It's just some of our dearest, dearest. And so I was glad to find this poem that I said to them, whether I actually read it when they were around or not, but when they were alive. So now I'm going to read the first ode that I wrote when these odes came to me. I don't really know where anything is in this floppy manuscript yet. 27. Yeah. Common things. So odes to common things. I was thinking, God, I could never do this. How does he do it? Ode to salt. Oh. Ode to the dog. Ode to the table. Oh. But then this came to me. Ode to the tampon. Inside out clothing. Queen's robe. White jacketed worker who clears the table, prepared for the feast which goes uneaten. Hospital orderly, straight jacket, which takes into its folded wings the spirit of the uncapturable one. Soldier's coat, dry dock for the boat not taken. Seeker of the red light of stars which have ceased to be before we see them. Bloodhound. Unhonored one, undertaker, secret keeper. You who in the cross-section diagram before the eyes of a girl child glide into potential space. Out of the second stage rocket's cardboard cylinder, up beyond the atmosphere.
Good evening. Is there... Is there a lot of traffic tonight or something? Because people I'm expecting are not here. We're expecting. Okay. Well, I have to remind you about cell phones and noise-making gizmos. And if you're not on the mailing list for this series and would like to be, you can sign up at the table near the entrance. I'm Stephen Yuntzer from the English Department at UCLA, which is one of the main sponsors of this series, partly because we're fortunate enough to have the aid of the Friends of English, which is an invaluable support group that helps the department out. Our other sponsors include, and of course, obviously the museum, UCLA's Cultural and Recreational Affairs. As I think you all know, from her beginning, Sharon Olds has been one of our most remarkable poets of the body. She is, more narrowly, one of our most notably sensuous poets. And even more narrowly, she is one of our most erotic poets, by which term I mean something like the antithesis of pornographic. At least if that latter term implies, as its etymology suggests, prostitution or commerce. Eros really has to do on this hypothesis not with acquisition or with material exchange, not with holdings of any sort, but with desire, longing, sehnsucht, with difference and separation and yearning. This is the case no less with Sharon's most recent book, though its subject is at the far end of the erotic experience. The volume is entitled Stag's Leap, and which is a winery, of course, that some of you I see know, and there is an allusion in the title to that winery. And it's about falling out of love. It's about divorce. Divorce, which, as William Carlos Williams wrote, is the sign of knowledge in our time. It's still our time. That's almost 100 years ago that he said that. But if the tone weren't all wrong, the book could have been called The X-Files. It's about the relationship between the poet and her ex, after all. But X is a notoriously polyvalent term. It stands for the unknown, not to mention the kiss in the email sign-off. Or is that the O that's the kiss? I never know. It probably depends on how you kiss. And, of course, for the X for the contraries of multiplication and cancellation. Sharon's poems, the new ones, feature what we might call the X qualities, foremost among which would be extravagance, by which I mean a wandering out of the way, an excursion into unfamiliar territory. One indication of their extravagance is their exuberance when it comes to diction. In the absence of the loved one, what the poet has, and what has even caused that absence, she sometimes seems to suspect, is her enthusiasm for her medium. Poem after poem is a cornucopia of rich, often rare terms, and time after time we are surprised by reckless terms of speech and exotic tropes. Whether she's conjuring nearly indescribable sounds that sleepers make, or the sublime color variations in a hip bruise, or the intricacies of a French bra, she loves to pile up descriptors and appellations, to make catalogs, to string together hyper-analytical figures. The poems embellish, excessively, if you will, in the course of elegizing the lost marriage and probing the reason for its end and making something of the nothing it might have seemed. As they do so, the poems become exhilarating meditations, recollections, and withal celebrations of the extremities of loneliness and love, and perhaps their inextricability. Sharon Olds.
Wow, 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 wow. That's why one writes, why one lives, is for something so generous, beautiful, beautifully put, exhilarating, exuberant. Thank you. I'm very touched and very energized by that kind welcome. Hey, I'm in LA. This is so cool. I've been here like, I don't know, about a half an hour. Now, I'm looking forward to reading a few poems from Stag's Leap. And I will start with one now that Stephen has so kindly welcomed me with word of that. Oh, how's the sound? It feels good from here. And it was good there. Good. This evening is also, for me, my first reading since my new book was accepted by my editor. And so I'm going to be reading a bunch of those poems as well. And then in the middle, if you like, we'll have a conversation, because I love to hear and talk and get the sense of where I am and where we are together and what we're doing. And so I was going to start with a poem in case there was anyone in the room who had never been to a poetry reading before. But it just doesn't look like that to me. So I'm going to jump in with an ode. My new, it's a manuscript still, I guess, but it's become an accepted manuscript, is called Odes. It's a book of odes. And please don't ask me what an ode is, because I don't know. And I feared that if I looked it up, that I would find out that I was actually not writing them and I would get discouraged. They began when I was in a bookstore and I saw a book of Neruda's odes, Odes to Common Things. And I had read him and admired him, and I'd seen Il Postino a couple of times, but I'd never really got into his work for some reason. And this was Facing Page, and I just didn't really know that that could be done or had been done. Odes to Common Things. So, not planning to, but the next time I wrote it, I wrote because I had seen this book. And later I'll read the first ode that I wrote, but I thought I would start with this one. Ode to the clitoris. Little eagerness, flower girl basket of soft thorn and petal, near the entry of the satin column of the inner aisle, scout in the wilderness, wild ear which perks up, tender dowser which points, imp shape shifter, bench pressing biceps of a teeny goddess who is buff, lotus for grief, wincy Minerva who springs full armored, molten, I did not know you at 7. I thought you were God's way of addressing me when I kept swinging on the rings after the bell had rung. He didn't use his words, he used you to get my attention. He wrenched me and wrenched me then in 6 or 7 wrenches of my body and brain, you, the tiny wrench which winched the wrenches. Later, you would do that without God, with boys, with kisses, and later you'd become an instrument of love's music. Today, I saw your portrait for the first time, your dorsal vein, your artery, your cavernous body, your vestibular bulb, your suspensory ligament, and I could see how evolution got the idea from you to invent a creature something like you, but a lot bigger. You were named for a Greek hill, clinine, a slope. You are the ground of our being, the tiny figure of the human, the hooded stranger who comes to the door, and if we bless her, we will be blessed. And it just turned out I was totally in a mood to praise things. And I was also, for about 9 years, I was living in New Hampshire with a partner with whom I didn't feel it might be the right thing to read in public and publish intimate personal poems. I had felt it was totally the right thing to do all those years before, which I believe it had been. But I just wasn't sure, and so the pressure of praise built up and came out in these more general poems. I've never had a very strong sense of the abstract. Hi. I don't know what happened, if I developed one or it developed me or what it was. As we see more of them, we'll have more sense of that tonight. But I don't want to read just odes, so I also moved during this time. I'd lived 44 years in the same place, Upper West Side, New York. I moved downtown, and I wrote this poem. And we were just talking about Deb Garrison, in her second book, I think, wrote one of my favorite books about September 11th, 2001. Just an amazing poem. And this poem is called "Looking South at Lower Manhattan, Where the Towers Had Been." If we see harm approaching someone, if you see me starting to talk about something I know nothing about, like the death of someone who's a stranger to me, step between me and language. This morning, I am seeing it more clearly that song can be harmful in its ignorance, which does not know itself as ignorance. I have crossed the line, as the line was crossed with me. I need to apologize to the letters of the alphabet, to the elements of the periodic table, to O and C and H, oxygen, carbon, hydrogen, which make up most of a human body, body which breaks down in fire, to the elements it was composed of, and all that is left is ashes, sacred ashes of strangers, carbon and nitrogen. And the rest departs as carbon dioxide and is breathed in by those nearby, the living who knew us and the living who did not know us. I apologize to nitrogen, to calcium with the pretty box shape of its crystal structure. I apologize to phosphorus and potassium, that raw bright metal we contain, and sodium and sulfur, and to the trace amounts which are in us somewhere, like the stars in the night, copper, zinc, cobalt, iron, arsenic, lead. I am singing against myself, as if rushing towards someone my song might be approaching to shield them from it. So once I was living right close, I just saw it in a different, I saw myself writing about what I don't know in a different way. Oh yeah. Then I'd like to read a poem from May 2010. I didn't know I was writing it a couple of months before our beloved Lucille Clifton was going to die. But I wrote it in a spirit of that time. You know, these poems we toss off because they just rise and flood over the edges out of us, and that we don't maybe even think they will be real poems and we'll ever read them to anyone. Ode to my living friends, May 2010. What a long gap there has been between deaths. It seems as if none of those closest to us has gone for what seems months. For me, it's been so long that when I think of someone dying, I think of my mother and father, my farriers out of nothing, out of the temporary rich something they were made of. I have carried them with me, not like a partial twin in a sling in front of and against me, but in my body, in my brain cells. But you, my friends, my chosen and chosen by ones, I see you as built-in aspects of the earth, like elements, like members of the periodic table. I know, we're mortal. The open door is there. But for weeks and weeks, I have forgotten that I'm going to lose every one of you until the ones who are left lose me. When I was a child, I could not have lost you. I did not know that I would find you. I'm blessed that it will happen to me. Before it does, let me say, you were exactly who I'd been looking for without daring to imagine. Breast that presses against other breasts, it was you. Root of washed sweet flag, timorous pond snipe, nest of guarded duplicate eggs, it was you. Hands I have taken, faces I have kissed, mortal I have ever touched, it was you. So that's for all of you, and of course we know who else it's from, who has gone from our poetry world in the last 2 years. Is just some of our dearest. And so I was glad to find this poem that I said to them, whether I actually read it when they were around or not, but when they were alive. So now I'm going to read the first ode that I wrote when these odes came to me. I don't really know where anything is in this floppy manuscript yet. 27. Yeah. Common things. So odes to common things. I was thinking, God, I could never do this. How does he do it? Ode to salt. Oh. Ode to the dog, ode to the table. Oh. But then this came to me. Ode to the tampon. Inside out clothing, queen's robe, white jacketed worker who clears the table prepared for the feast which goes uneaten, hospital orderly, straight jacket, which takes into its folded wings the spirit of the uncapturable one. Soldier's coat, dry dock for the boat not taken. Seeker of the red light of stars which have ceased to be before we see them. Bloodhound, unhonored one, undertaker, secret keeper. You who in the cross-section diagram before the eyes of a girl child glide into potential space. Out of the second stage rocket's cardboard cylinder, up beyond the atmosphere where no one has gone before. You who began life as a seed in the earth. You who blossomed into the air like steam from a whale's blowhole. You who were compressed into a dense calyx, nib which dips into a 40-year river, mute calligrapher, we write you here. And that was so different for me to address a general idea, as it were, that no four-beat lines. I mean, it's like free verse. And I write in four-beat lines. And so for me, that was how it looked on the page and how it felt was really, it really felt like something new. It was thrilling. That was in 2008. And then I just have been writing them. And I'll read another one of them. Ode to My Whiteness. This was inspired by Evie Shockley's great book, The New Black, amazing book. And one of my favorite poems ever is her poem in that book, Ode to My Blackness. And Evie and I read together at some events, and then This poem came to me thanks to Evie. Ode to my whiteness. You were invisible to me. You went without saying. You were my weapon secret from myself. Whatever I got, you helped get it for me. You were my ignorance. Because of you, I was not innocent. I did not see that. You were my blinding light. My dreams had a blank area in the center, taking up most of the screen they played on in my sleep, a blazing circle that blanked out the core of the scene. I thought it was my mother's violence, but it was you, too. You, the unseen fat which fed me in the wilderness. You, my Masonic handshake. You, my silence. You, my drone. You, my collaborator. You, my magician's cloak of steam. You, my dissembler. You, mine. I, yours, irisless eyeball. You, my blindness, sponsor of my helpless act. You, my stillness, my friend's blackness, a dancer. You, another, the two of you moving together. And then I always like to read a poem that I've never read before to anyone at a reading. And this one, this is that one, you can kind of see. It's better than it was early this afternoon. And being here, I was born in San Francisco and I grew up in Berkeley. And so for me, I saw a picture of New York City when I was seven, at night, black and white, all that light, all those little windows, all those neighbors, no houses. So you'd have people living above you and on both sides and below you, not your family. Other people. And I said, whoa. And I said, what's the name of this place? What is this place? What is this place? And someone said, that is a place where no decent person would wish to live. And I thought, there is a place for me. That's my place. But of course, the ocean here and the mountains, the clouds, the plants, just about everything. I'm very close to it. This is called Holding to a Wall, Treading Salt Water. Holding to a wall, treading salt water, in my dream I turned my back now to the open ocean, the biggest one, west of the city of my birth, which behind me now went to the horizon and beyond it, following the curve of the earth down and holding to the earth. I was about to swim back to land, but it was so far. I felt the power of the sliding body of water around me, big as my mother when I was an egg inside her. No, a blastocele, no, a tiny seahorse embryo. And I thought, what if my mother could have been happy if I hadn't been born? What if she could have found true love young and become an opera star as she longed to be and never going flat? Would I abort myself if that would have resulted in her ecstasy? People would die for their kids, and in a way, my mother was my giant baby I grew in and emerged from and took care of like a punishment child whore. Couldn't I give up my life for her? And for a moment I did. At last I had the power to make my mother happy. And then I cavorted quietly in the swell with my fellow embryos which had chosen their mother's lives over their own. We were as safe in matter as we would have been after dying of old age. I floated like a sea star. I floated like a lay in the wake of the boat from which we let go her ashes and most of the blossoms from her garden. At last I had not ruined her life. I had set my darling loose to sing like a god. I thought I was going to like that poem. It may be sick. It may be bad. I don't think it's that bad a poem, but it may be wicked. I don't know it well enough to know. But maybe you'll tell me. I'll read a poem from Stag's Leap, and then let's have a conversation, if you like. So this is one, this is an end, I call it an end of long marriage book. I don't know what I thought was wrong with the title divorce book. It just didn't feel like I felt. End of long marriage, right? And I said to my grown children, I will not publish a book about any of this for at least 10 years. And this was just so they could have their own inner life about this event, which, though they were grown, was very surprising and new, so that they, you know, no one signs up, you know, when the lines of preconceived people are lining up, choosing their parents. The line for family poet is not very long. So that worked out very well. The poems are now maybe seven, some of them, half of the book or two-thirds, 17 years old. And this is one towards the end of the book called Years Later. At first glance, there on the bench where he'd agreed to meet, it didn't seem to be him. But then the face of grim friendliness was my former husband's, like the face of a creature looking out from inside its knocks. No fault, no knock, clever nut of the hearing aid hidden in the ear I do not feel I love anymore. Small bandage on the cheek, peopled with tiny lichen from a land I don't know. We walk. I had not remembered how deep he held himself inside himself, my fun for 32 years to lure him out. I still kind of want to, as if I see him as a being with a baby paw caught. His voice is the same, low, still pushed around the level bubble in his throat. We talk of the kids, and it's as if that will never be taken from us. But it feels as if he's not here, though he's here. It feels as if, for me, there's no one there. As when he was with me, it seemed there was no one there for any other woman for the first 30 years. Now I see, I've been hoping each time we meet that he would praise me for how well I took it, but it's not to be. Are you happy as you thought you'd be? I ask. Yes, and his smile is touchingly pleased. I thought you'd look happier, I say, but after all, when I am looking at you, you're with me. We smile. His eyes warm a moment with the accustomed shift, as if he's turning into the species he was for those 30 years, and turning back. I glance toward his torso once, his legs. He's like a stick figure now, the way when I was with him, other men seemed like Ken dolls, all clothes. Even the gleam of his fresh wedding ring is no blade to my rib. This is married Ken. As I walk him toward his street, I joke, and for an instant he's alive toward me, a gem of sea of pond in his eye. Then the retreat into himself, which always moved me, as if there were a sideways gravity in him toward some vanishing point. And no, he does not want to meet again in a year. When we part, it is with a dry bow and goodbye. And then there is the spring park, damp as if freshly peeled, sweet greenhouse, green cemetery with no dead in it, except in some shaded woods, under some years of leaves and rotted cones, the body of a warbler, like a whole note fallen from the sky, my old love for him, like a songbird's rib cage picked clean. There we go. So let's have a conversation. There is a microphone. So if you just want to say something or ask something.
Please wait for the microphone, too.
Yes, it will come. It will come to you. And while that's happening, I thought it was obvious that that book was by someone who was not angry enough. I thought that was obvious. I thought it was in several of the poems. There was something wrong with the narrator of this book. Not able to have that anger that we would have for a friend in the same situation. So that's what I thought. Yes, good. Hi.
Hi. What do you find the most difficult kinds of poems to write? About family or about other kinds of situations?
Cool. Could you hear that? What do you find the most difficult kinds of poems to write? Good poems, right? I don't think it's that there's a particular category besides that for me. I mean, I think that poems of sexual love or probably poems of sex without love are hard to write well, you know, but if you're totally interested in that subject and in writing about that subject, I just couldn't believe it's like if you get the football and you want to go that way and there's no one in your way, it's like, where did everybody go? So writing about sexual love was just something that I felt blessed that it was there to do, because I really was interested in doing that. So not what you'd call easy, not easy to do well, but just very interesting. So I think that when I do my worst writing on any subject is when I'm most, if I don't understand what I'm talking about, that's hard. But then if I can't I don't know if cars still have neutral. That used to be a gear that cars had. And if there's a thing that happens that is a little like slipping into neutral so that my will is not too vigorously engaged. And but I don't know how to make that happen really, except, you know, exercise and drink a lot of water, sleep, and, you know, not drink too much wine. And for me, no drugs. You know, we each know what brings out our better writing. But except for that, it's a great question. I don't think it's connected with subject so much. Poems about one's own children, well, then you just put them in a drawer. So writing, that's what I do now. So writing them well, that could happen. But then you just might not bring them out into the world. I might not for a while. Thank you.
So that concludes this week's edition of Dramatext. We'll be back next week with another hour-long presentation of the spoken word. You were listening to Sharon Olds, U.S. poet, a lecture that she performed at the Hammer Museum in Los Angeles. Till next week.
Salut, ici Matt Track, vous écoutez CKUT 90.3 FM.
Expozine 2021, 20th annual edition of Montreal's beloved small press comic and zine fair. Back inside after all this time, this Saturday and Sunday, November 20th and 21st, from 11 to 6 p.m. at the SAT 1201 Saint Laurent. Get your copy of the latest zines, quarantines, graphic novels, and radical tracks. This special 20th Expozine also features a program of artist presentations and activities held online and around town. See expozine.ca for all the details. That's Saturday and Sunday at the SAT for Expozine. Expozine is a CKUT co-presentation.
Puisque ça fait plus d'un an qu'on le mentionne, et que de toute façon vous le savez probablement déjà, on a décidé de ne pas vous le dire. Donc, on ne vous redira pas que pour se protéger de la COVID-19, il faut se laver les... On ne répétera pas encore une fois qu'il faut porter un... Et surtout, qu'il faut garder nos... avec les autres. Vous le savez, c'est la meilleure façon de combattre le virus, même lorsqu'on est vacciné. On continue de se protéger. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
Bonjour, les infirmières prennent soin des patients avec cœur et dévouement. Aujourd'hui, c'est à notre tour de prendre soin de ces professionnels en valorisant leurs compétences et en assurant rapidement un meilleur équilibre entre travail et vie familiale. C'est également l'occasion pour les personnes qui ont quitté le réseau public de revenir prêter main forte avec de meilleures conditions. Plus que jamais, nous avons besoin d'elles pour améliorer la vie des patients. Pour en connaître davantage sur notre plan d'action, rendez-vous à québec.ca/infirmière. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
Introducing the awaited debut album, Lydium, featuring original jazz compositions by Iranian-Canadian composer